Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. I'm Larry Hardesty of ESPN New York 98.7 FM. I have the pleasure of talking to you about the man you're about to listen to. Doc Stanley, the legendary Doc Stanley. I always say before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. When you listen to Doc Stanley, you have to appreciate the knowledge, the connection. When he's at the ballpark during baseball, he's around the water cooler talking to the athletes. When he's at the basketball games, he's in the locker room talking to players, talking to general managers, talking to front office personnel to bring you the insight why people make the decisions they make. When he's on the ice skating rink, he's talking to some of the few African-American, African-Canadian, African players who are on the ice right now making a difference. You are listening to Doc Stanley on Sports and Death.
Talk Radio on the Trusting God Radio Network, and we always open the show with a prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day, and more importantly, have your will, have your way. Lord, we ask you not give us so much what we want, give us what we need, hoping that it's true what we want. And we want you, and we need you every hour. We thank you for your dying son, Jesus, to die on the cross. We may have the right to the tree of life. And we also, dear Lord, to homage you, the one and only true God. Ask you, Lord, we thank you for the little things that are so large to take for granted. For blessing you said, I've come. Will come. All in merit. Name your darling son, Jesus. Amen. Well, it's a Friday looking back, and the posse will be getting in. And as always, thank God for Friday. Thank God for every day. And remember that tonight is Friday Night Fights at Madison Square Garden. Big fight tonight is the Lennox Lewis and Ray Mercer fight. It was a big card. It was a card that had four former heavyweight champions. I wonder who the champion at the time, too. Four former heavyweight champions and one light heavyweight champion. The main event of that card was Evander Holyfield against Bobby Chez. Semi-main event was Merciless Ray Mercer against Lennox Lewis. And just before that was Terrible Tim Witherspoon a Brownsville product and who held the heavyweight champion of the world against Jorge Gonzalez. Tremendous card. I remember posted to my good friend, I can't think of his name, Bill Zawski. It was six big men, the title of it. And it was a poster. Now I can give that into the Trust and God Sports Dev Entertainment Waterflats Hall of Fame. He at the press conference, he showed it, and he called me over. He said, "Doc, what do you think about it?" I said, "Man, that's fantastic." He said, "Oh, yes. Doc, you want it?" "So what?" "Yeah." And he autographed it for me right then and there. And then I got Mercer, Chaz, Evander, Gonzalez, and Wisdom. And the one guy I didn't get that particular night was Lennox for some particular reason. Maybe he was doing something with his mother, because his mother sat ringside with me and Rooney. And he later autographed it for me. He's the only one whose signature was in red. And, as you know, he once again, an undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, Madison Square Garden, the temple of boxing, as Don King calls it. And it was a great night of fighting. Very rare can you get that mixture. The Chaz Holyfield fight ended inadvertently and rapidly as Holyfield hit Chaz in the throat, a la the same way Kenny Norton hit Dwayne Bobic in the throat at a big fight they were having at Madison Square Garden. And the fight of the night was, of course, the Ray Mercer, Lennox Lewis fight. They were both former Olympians. Both had won gold medals. Mercer at heavyweight. Lennox at the super heavyweight division at the Olympics. Lennox's mother was ringside. I remember me and Rooney was sitting there, this tearful, concerned mother, and me and Rooney were consoling her and confirming and assuring her that her husband, her son was all right, that he was winning. Now, Mark Breland, who is co-host on Friday Night Fights with John Duddy, you know, Breland, like so many, thought that Mercer had pulled the fight. You know, I thought Ray won the fight because he was very good on the inside, and he out-jabbed Lennox. Duddy made some comments. Mark, again, once again, thought that Ray had both outboxed and out-jabbed Lennox and had won the fight. You know, Duddy made a comment. You know, he went on many years later to take on Mike Tyson and actually made easy work of it, pretty easy work of it. And that was somewhat true when Lennox became aggressive. The early parts of that fight, Lennox held back, wasn't going to take any chance. I'd read someplace that Lennox Lewis and Roy Jones Jr. know how to stay out of the danger zone. As you know, Lennox had been knocked out previously by Oliver McCall, losing his title to him, and also losing the title to Ken Hopson Rockman, knockouts. And when Lennox, as the fight went on, became aware that Mike wasn't Mike anymore to any degree, and he pursued and became aggressive and won the fight. If Tyson had been remotely like Mike Tyson, he'd have beat Lennox. I remember the great Marion B. Boykin, B stands for Black, both Asian, Korean, and brother, had said Lennox had won, that he was going to, there was no question that the fight would be won by none other than Mike Tyson. Well, in a second, we'll jump away in the hoops to be right with, no, better still, what we're going to do, we're going to let Mel Cosell Smith Jr., the man who coined the great phrase, the Sports and Death Nation, well, he will bring you into the Sports and Nation for right now. Hello?
Yes, good doctor. The Sports and Death Nation is here. The Sports and Death panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink is here. And that is the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney. And with that, the opening theme.
Yeah. So But you picked up the coat and you brought back a weapon.
Yeah, that's a new opening theme, Call Me Righteous. And, you know, the fight tonight that's featured on MSG, Dusty, is the Lennox Lewis-Ray Mercer fight. That was part of a hell of a fight. That was part of a hell of a fight card. I remember that fight that night. It featured Tim Witherspoon against Jorge Gonzalez. Gonzalez was a big contender heavyweight division. Witherspoon, a former heavyweight champion. Then the next fight was two former heavyweight champions, Ray Mercer and Lennox Lewis. I'm trying to think now, who was heavyweight champion?
Ray Mercer beat Lennox Lewis that night.
Well, you know what? I tell you,
The fight was very close.
It was a lot of people thought that was the case, and I remember the thing that I remember so vividly and candidly about that fight, besides being there, was that me and you were sitting ringside to Lennox's mother, and we had to constantly assure her that, you know, he was winning the fight and that he was all right. I mean, that was the fight.
Well, she turned to us, talk with tears in her eyes, if you remember. The fight was that brutal.
And that was the night that showed me. That was the night that showed me that Lennox Lewis could fight. I remember Ollie Dunlap, one of the class acts of boxing, one of the guys who dispels that theory about the seedy, dirty people of boxing. And he said when Ray Leonard first went to Mike Trainor's office, they sat down. And the first thing Trainor looked at him and said was, can he fight? So that's like, you know, you got Rod Carew, Pete Rose, Clemente, and Ty Cobb in front of you, and you're saying, can he hit? And they looked at each other and laughed. And they said, he just wanted to live in gold medal. Mike said, no. I understand he can box. Can he fight? And we saw that Ray Leonard could fight in the first fight against Roberto Duran. And if you missed it, then you saw it against Tommy Hearns. The thing
Tommy
is,
Hearns fight was a classic. Absolute classic. Ray, man, was in a bunch of classic rumbles.
It's not about classics here. It's about fight. That's the night that Ray Leonard, against Duran in Montreal, showed he could fight. And this was the night that Lennox Lewis showed he could fight. And I think about this too, Rooney. He showed he could fight, and you wonder why. Well, I guess the two knockouts, but you wonder why. You kind of understand. Remember Emmanuel told you, he told us that if he could get Lennox to fight, in a fight, the way he fights in the gym, he would be just even more awesome.
Manny Stewart personally one day, just kind of chit-chatting. Vreeland was on the card of fighting somebody, I believe, and something else. And we started talking, and the subject of Lennox came up. And we were, something we were chit-chatting about, you know, boxing in general. And he said, the public, and I was kind of shocked to hear this, Doc and Dust, but it came right from his lips, no lie. Said, you know, the public has never seen the best of Lennox. So I said, man, what do you mean you haven't seen the best? I've seen some incredible rumbles. He's like, let me tell you something. I have to beg him to throw the jab. I have to beg him to throw the right hand. He's like, if you guys ever saw him, the way he destroys a guy in the gym, if I could ever get him to just come out and show his whole arsenal, he would wow you. He would absolutely wow you. He said, really, the public has really never seen the best of Lennox Lewis. And
well,
I thought about
funny.
It for a moment. Donovan said, wow, we haven't seen the best of this guy
well,
yet.
You know what? Yeah,
because Lennox Lewis was a gym fighter. Have you ever heard the expression gym fighter?
There you go, Dusty.
Yeah.
There you go.
He's a gym fighter.
And you know what? And
when
what,
he
Dusty,
went up
he,
against...
He became, hold on, Dusty. He became even more a gym fighter when McCall, and I've seen him knock him out.
Exactly. When Oliver McCall knocked him stiff. And that's when Emmanuel Stewart says, I'm going to take this back to the drawing room, and I'm going to give him a jab, and I'm going to give him a defense, and I'm going to give him a right hand. He did for Lennox Lewis, Emmanuel Stewart, that is, what he did for the Klitschko's. The Klitschko's would have been retired 20 years ago.
And Dusty, not only that, the thing quite got Professor Ellis, not only that, Dusty, he did for Lennox Lewis what Buddy McGirt did for Arturo Gatti.
Yeah, absolutely. He gave him a jab. He gave him some dancing shoes. He gave him some defense, because if it hadn't been for that, Mickey Ward would have eaten him for lunch three times. And he did. He did for, and Emmanuel Stewart did twice was it twice? Yeah, twice for Miguel Cotto what he did to Lennox Lewis. When Miguel Cotto dropped Emmanuel Stewart, he was back to his stupid Puerto Rican way of fighting. That's the way it was.
I'm
telling you, man.
And Dusty Winnie, we have, if I'm lucky, Professor Elliott would be with us. The first man to do a radio show in New York City on wrestling. I knew you would love that. Let's do our sponsor plug and get to the professor and some more boxing here on Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Our shows, as you know, and he's here. One of the sponsors, the CJ Productions. This is the Monster Dream International promoter from Brazil. And when we're in Brazil, it's the main studio that we broadcast our shows from. He's in town, one of our producers, Luis Souza, named Sali Brazil Restaurant, and that's number 3-star hotel in all of Brazil, the iconic Tabajara, our good friend, Imao Destino, Marina Park, one of the top 5-star hotels in all of Brazil, and late at night, a little hungry. But on the course of the day, it's Chupitos. Get on the line, give them a call, whatever you want. They got it. They're open till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. That's what you call in Chupitos. Sport the Laser, the capital city of the state of Ceará. And with that, let's fight on back to Sports and Depth Friday. Friday, look, as you know, it's Friday. I mean, it's MSG Friday Night Fights on the MSG Network, part of their big promotion, their Blockbuster Festival. And we want to thank Larry Torres for the media notes he's given us tonight. It's Lennox Lewis against Ray Mercer in one of the classic throwdowns at Madison Square Garden. That fight happened back on May the 10th, 1996. That you had two former Olympic champions, Mercer, who had won the heavyweight gold medal, and then you had Lennox, who had won the newly minted and brought about super heavyweight medal. It was a 10-round unanimous decision by Lennox Lewis. MSG Network Summer Block is the producer and sponsor of this, and a lot of people did feel that the fight had went to Ray Mercer, and nobody more adamantly about it than Ray Mercer. And, you know, of course, the match we're going
to
be...
But you have to go back, Doc, also. You have to go back, if you want to talk about Lewis, you have to go back to the Olympics. If he had not been that 6'3", 4'5", whatever the heck he was, and threw rocks, he would not have made the Olympic gold. He would have been beaten soundly by a better conditioned Riddick Bowe. Riddick Bowe was the killer, the dark horse in the Olympic trials. I mean, not Olympic trials, the Olympics that day.
Yes.
When it came to the medal round, Riddick Bowe had it sewed up. Riddick Bowe was an undisciplined dude. He didn't follow orders. These are statements, uncorroborated, but he broke curfews and all that. He figured Lewis, because he only had one hand, his right hand, and he poured with his left hand.
One of the things that bothered Eddie Futch. Now understand, Rock Newman made him a lot of money. Promote him, but
yeah.
Eddie Futch couldn't understand how a guy who was a fighter couldn't stay in the gym. I mean,
yeah,
I know,
dude,
I got a problem going to Paris, but you got to do your work.
The dude was a natural, as opposed to Lennox Lewis, who had a rock for a right hand and a flag for a left hand.
No, really.
All he did was wave that left hand. In fact, I'm not trying to be funny. In fact, you could show two movie clips, Teofilo Stevenson and Lennox Lewis, and they fought almost exactly alike.
Wow.
Wave that left hand and bomb you and kill you with that right hand. That's exactly what Lennox Lewis did to Riddick Bowe. And I couldn't believe, I was shocked to see that this dude, one hand bandit with a flag in the left hand and the other hand, could beat a polished fighter who cleaned up the Olympics like Riddick Bowe. That's, you know, unfortunately, fortunately, through trial and tribulations, Lennox Lewis fell under the hands of Emmanuel Stewart, and Emmanuel Stewart saved his career. Other than that, he would not have gone anywhere.
He not only beat
Riddick Bowe, but Bowe didn't go the distance, didn't go to 3 rounds in that final between the two.
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you. He stopped him.
Emmanuel saved, he made the Twiscos, and the ones that they stay hidden. Professor Elliott, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm waiting for you.
Okay. Gentlemen, You know, Rudy, this is the, well, give us your resume. First man ever to do a boxing, a wrestling radio show.
It was the very first professional talk show on radio on WHBI Radio in New York in 1968.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. Congratulations.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, okay, Rooney, I know you got some WW stuff to come at him, so we'll just go ahead. Now, real quickly, hold on. Let me get back to our opening pitches.
Yeah.
Hold on, Rooney, because I know you'll be tagging him all night. He'll be going back and forth all night. That fight you're talking
Probably
about once again. with the cape on. What you said, Dusty, is what Breland said. I thought Ray won the fight because he was very good on the inside and he out jabbed Lennox. And,
yeah.
You know, Duddy. Hold on a second.
Really? Yeah, I gotta get my shout. Okay, come on. It wasn't courageous rumble. I actually had Lewis ahead by 1 point at the end of that. Most of the Garden crowd disagreed with me, by the way. The rumble was that close. If it had been a draw or if Mercer had gotten the decision, I would not have been disappointed either way. That's how close the fight was. A point either way. Or a draw. I really would have been satisfied if a draw. If they had declared it a draw, I would have went with it. Most of the Garden crowd booed the decision, and quite frankly, it was that close. But I did have a, Lewis ahead by 1 point, Doc, because if you remember, Mrs. Lewis asked us with tears in her eyes, that poor woman at the time, and I'm thinking, wow. And she asked us, Doc, with tears flowing down her cheeks, do you think he's ahead? And my heart just went out to the woman. My heart just went out to her. You know, doing some amateur boxing way back in the day, my mom would never come to my fights because she'd say, and I quote, I'm not going any place to watch anyone hit my firstborn child in the face. And I would try to convince her. No, really, that was my mom's reason, that she would never come to my fights. And I said, come on, Mom. And he said, I told you, I'm not going to watch anybody punch my firstborn baby in the face. It's not happening. And I said, what I'm going to be doing, just let me finish 1 second. And I said, Mom, I'm going to be doing the punching in the face, not receiving the doing. And she would never go. Well, I told her after Doc and I had came from that fight with Mrs. Lewis with tears in her streets asking us if we think her son was ahead. Mom, I understand now. Now I understand.
All mothers are the same. I gave my mom my gold medals and my gold, all my trophies, and she saw the pictures and she saw everything. It still won't convince her. She still won't come to see me fight.
Right,
hell
right.
No. I said, if you're going to do this crazy nonsense, I'll make sure you eat the right foods and you're resting and all that, but I'm not going to see you, my son, get beat by anybody. And we never punish you that way. That was funny. We never punish you that way. I'm not going to see you. My dad, God bless him, was my favorite fan. But I mean, he of course he worried. But my mom, are you kidding? She wouldn't know. I would come home and she would pull a full body inspection, man, to see all the bruises. Where are the bruises? And God forbid I came in with a cut eye or bleeding nose and all. Oh my God, you could hear her screaming to the heavens, man. But there's nothing you can do about mom. She can't change
it. You know, Gus, I know that you were, considered a very, 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 very good fighter. And I have to tell you, man, having had a taste of amateur boxing, mostly in smokers as opposed to actual AAU sanctioned fights, but fought enough smokers to know that, hey, Gus, I have a whole new respect for what you and those like you do that you did. Take my whole new respect for what you did. Wow, that's a tough one.
Excuse me out there, 1 second.
Really tough.
Yeah, hello?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
How long are we going to be? Because my caretaker has to clock out. You know, he has to use the other phone. That's
well,
why I
as
want.
For you, I'm sorry, what was the name again? I'm sorry, I didn't get the first name.
Professor Elliot Marin.
Professor Marin?
Yes, Elliot.
It's actually a pleasure having you on the, thank you. It's actually a pleasure having you on air, because as Doc told me, you were the first person to actually have a wrestling a talk show here in the city for the most part.
Yeah, I had a talk show on radio in 1968. So So we're talking like almost 45 years ago.
My father brought me up, taking me up to the garden to watch my two favorite guys, Bruno Sammartino, superstar Billy Graham.
Okay, two great guys.
My favorite guys of all time. My favorite babyface in Sammartino, my favorite heel in superstar.
Like I said, anytime you want to chip chat about wrestling, I'll talk all you want with it. That was my life and my bread and butter.
Well, you know, I went to trying to break into this business, Doctor, I had the pleasure of going to now WWE Hall of Famer, the unpredictable Johnny Rods, is a school over at the
Gleason's Gym.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, Doctor, that I now have a whole new respect for what they do.
Well, everybody does their own thing, you know that?
Yeah, well.
And like I said, anytime you want to rap about wrestling, you want to get me back on the line, I'll be glad to talk all you want.
Well, Doctor, you're definitely going to have to come back. Because like I said, I was a pretty decent amateur wrestler, you know, in the amateurs. When I tried to make the transition to the pros, I really, obviously I'd watched wrestling since I was a kid and had an idea, obviously, from the falls they take, it's pretty physical. But, Doctor, I was in no way, shape, or form ready for the grueling and brutal physicality that I went through and learning how to take those falls and learning what the pros do.
The first thing you had to learn is how to fall, and if you got involved in wrestling, the first thing you learn, keep your mouth closed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been, hey, that's talking to the doctor is bringing back very painful memories.
Okay.
The funny part about that, Doc, just before you go, the funny part about that was, I myself thought I was, even though I was a Rey Mysterio-sized guy, but I could only be so tough. But a lot of those guys were thinking they were pretty tough until they
came. But you sound like you came from Brooklyn.
I actually had Brooklyn, born and bred, Doctor. Good job.
I was born and raised in East New York, Bronzeville.
Oh, okay, great. I'm actually a good sign myself. Not too far from the newly put up a Barclays Center, if you will, here in
that's downtown Brooklyn.
Yeah, right. That's exactly where I am.
Flatbush
and
Atlantic.
Indeed, indeed. And
okay,
Doctor,
like I said,
a lot of those guys,
if you need my services, free to call me. Let Doc get my number. Anytime you want to talk, I'm here.
You gotta come, Doc. We realize you gotta go, but like I said, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And you have to come back on the show because I got so many things and memories. I have to ask you about of stars in the past, Andre the Giant, and superstar Billy Graham, and Bulldog Brower, and
Kovac, and one second. I am very prejudiced. My favorite guy was the Grand Wizard. Sorry.
Oh, Ernie Wolf, a.k.a. Ernie Wolf, the great manager of the Grand Wizard of Wrestling. He was tremendous, wasn't he, Doc?
He was the best, number one all the way.
The Grand Wizard of Wrestling. I remember him being at Shea Stadium. When I believe Hulk Hogan wrestled Andre the Giant, and the Wiz was one of the heel managers.
You can't tell me about the business. I know it better than you, inside and out.
A great, great performer, a great speaker, the Grand Wizard of.
Another good guy was George
Hill. One of my favorite heel managers, the Grand Wizard of Wrestling.
Okay, like I said, I gotta wrap it up, but like I said, feel free to call me anytime you want.
A pleasure, Doc, and I look forward to speaking to you in the near future.
Okay, you got it.
Take it easy now.
God bless.
A pleasure. Good
night,
guys. Same to you and the family.
Right.
Hey, Jeff, do you remember those guys back then, Superstar Billy,
Professor Elliott? Hold on.
What is the doctor?
No, yeah, you're talking to Professor Elliott? Go ahead. Professor, are you left us?
Oh, that's good. For a second. Well, the doctor that was just with us said he also had to leave, but I was about to ask him about the older days also, and my friend, like I told him, Doc, my favorite. It's funny because when they met, I was kind of young. It was kind of a dilemma for me for who to root for. Here's my favorite baby face, the great, and I mean great, Bruno Sammartino, and my favorite heel, the great, and I mean great, superstar Billy Graham. And it's funny, usually I have somebody pick one or the other. I was rooting for both guys in the same match. I mean, it was unbelievable. great workers, tremendous. And that what I was about to tell the other doctor was this, that, you know, people don't realize that because they think, well, you know, just all a big show. But, you know, back then, more so than now, the champion, in a sense, really was the champion. In the sense that every month, some big name heel, some big name heel would come into the territory, and San Martino would have to defend against him every month. And these, you have to understand, back then, Doc, these are legitimate tough guys. Okay, not just good actors, not good, just good performers, legitimate tough guys. So in a sense, Bruno really was the champion. 1 week, here comes a crippler Karl Kovac. The next month, the next month, Bulldog Brower's coming in. The next week, Freddie Blassie's coming in. You know, the next week, here comes superstar Billy Graham. The next week, here comes Killer Kowalski. You know, and it goes on and on and on and on. The next week, here comes Waldo Von Erich. I mean, so in a sense, like with all these absolutely brutally tough, legit tough guys that he had to work with, he really was, in a sense, really was the champion, man. He really was. A tremendous, tremendous athlete who people don't know once went 3 rounds with Sonny Liston.
Dr. Gallant, it's not available.
I'm sorry, you're with me there, Doc? He once went 3 rounds with Sonny Liston. But Bruno said that he was never as comfortable on the boxing ring as he was on the mat. But yeah, the guy's a legitimate strong man and a legitimate tough guy, Bruno Sammartino. And every week he had some legitimate bona fide group coming in to work with him. Freddie Blassie and Nikolai Volkov. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. Legitimate tough guy and a great champion. A tremendous performer. Are you with me, Doc? Is anyone out there in the vast land still there? Am I to sign off to the Indies? Incredibly great sports in that nation, or is anyone indeed with me? I can always sing.
Sing like what?
What was that? Doc?
Yeah. What,
hey, Doc,
what song you want
to
sing?
I don't know if your doctor's appearing, so I have to talk to him about this. But yeah, Doc, that's what I was just telling the audience, man, that in a way, can you hear me, Doc? Look, you there?
Yeah.
I can barely hear you.
Yeah, I keep hearing background noise and singing songs.
Yeah,
this airway should be clear. We're going to discuss things.
You're right. You're absolutely right, because I'm getting the same kind of feedback. I don't know what Doc's doing with this deal and what the
because this is totally unprofessional. We're not getting any clear feedback on anything.
You're right. I don't know if it has to do with the satellites up there, Doc, or how it works.
I wear there in Mars somewhere.
Hey, Doc, I was just telling the fans, though, man. You know, in a sense, people don't realize this. Obviously, you know the game. But in a way, you know, they think of this as just one giant show. But, in a sense, Doc, Bruno Sammartino really was the champion. In a sense that... You know, in the sense that wrestling was much tougher and much harder in the days of Bruno. And he really was the champion in the sense that 1 week he's working with Freddie Blassie.
You're bringing some names from the past.
Yeah, 1 week he's working with Freddie Blassie, Doug. The next week, Bulldog Brower's coming in.
Yeah.
The next week, superstar Billy Graham is coming in, Doug. You know, next week, Nikolai Volkov is coming in.
Oh, the Russian. Oh, she's what a killer.
Yeah, I have a serious autograph over there about Nikolai. I met him many years ago. The next week you got Ivan Koloff coming in the next week. Then you got Ivan Koloff coming in, Doug.
Exactly.
Then the next week, you know, then the next week you got Waldo Von Erich coming in. This one on and on and on, Doug, with these legitimate bona fide tough guys that Sammy, you know, had to work with coming in every other week. I mean, the next week after that, Doug, he's working with Killer Kowalski.
Killer Kowalski, oh my God. All those animals, man, were animals. And when I say animals, I mean it in a complimentary way.
I know what you mean, Doug, but they were animals, all of them, each and every one of them. And you have to remember, Doug, every other week at the Garden, you know, once a month, he's defending against you. And I don't have to tell you, Doug, these were legitimate bona fide.
Hold on. You're talking about animals. He's here. He put them together, trained them, brought us some Jordan, giants.
Yes.
None other than Harold Weston Jr. is in the house, and we're going to take a quick break before we get back to you guys and Harold. Just a couple of things that we got to mention here. It's a Friday looking back, of course, it's at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Red Network. Some things looking back at. In fact, let's take a look at our names here in the. And we will take a quick look. We go into the photos that we have for you, and we're Lance Lewis, who is the feature on the Friday Night Madison Garden fights against Ray Mercer, and we also put a picture of Ray Mercer up there, as well as a shot of Evander, the real deal, Holyfield. There's Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez, a great shot, because you see Alex holding his head, and Derek looking out on the field, and it's probably saying a lot, as Derek is looking out on the field, he can't get on the field. And as he's thinking he can't play, A-Rod's holding his head and say, hey, they're trying to make sure I never play again. Tiger Woods, as he gets ready to hopefully have a better round today, not too good yesterday, as he is trying to get a major after not getting one in over 5 years. He has the most majors outside of Jack Nicklaus, 14, looking for number 15. But the pictures we have for you there is none other than Lennox Lewis, JPP, who said the other day, hey, he's going to play when he's healthy, when he's ready, when he's 100% again. Until then, he will not be playing football. Picture of LeBron James, who, even though you win the NBA championship, even though you're the best player in basketball, when they call you for jury duty, you have to go. And they said that. In fact, I had to go this week myself. LeBron James, the best all-around player in basketball right now in the eyes of many. Had to go to jury duty, but I found that he got dismissed. But more importantly is he's back in Cleveland doing things for the community. That's what it's all about. People dogged him for leaving. Say, hey, you know what? No wrong with a guy working in New York and living in Jersey. The man's working in Miami, but he's still doing things for his community in Cleveland. And you know, hardly hear anything about that. And they're so busy dogging him, they're not giving him some apropos credit for, as Ali says, service to others, you remember your space here on Earth. And Dr. King, life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing other than the Bible? The Son of Man came to serve and not be served. Again, the pictures, there's Lennox Lewis. There's a picture of Mark Whelan and John Petty. They are the co-hosts of MSG Friday Night Fights, which is on tonight at 9 o'clock. JPP, he made All-Pro in a game 2 years ago against the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas, one of the gifted defensive players in the game. And right now, he's coming off an injury. We'll see how that makes out for him. Derek Jeter, well, the great one. Number two, the right number. He's second to none. There's a player. There's a person. Everything that Jordan Magic was supposed to be, everything Mickey Mantle wasn't. A real live American hero. Alex Rodriguez, bears all on shortstop to play the game. He's been the big focus of a lot of things, and that pitcher's a good one. He's holding his head, and Derek's looking over at the field, and Derek, you can say now the pitcher was saying he's wondering when he's going to get back on the field. And Alex, what are they going to do with him when he gets off the field at the end of the season? LeBron James. Court duty pictures and names, Lennox Lewis and Mercer, a great fight. A lot of people thought, and we want your opinion here too, Harold. Lennox Lewis and Ray Mercer, a great night at the Garden. Mercer against Lewis, Chaz against Evander Holyfield, Gonzalez against Tim Witherspoon out there from Brownsville. We also have, DJ and A-Rod, Tiger Woods. What you going to do? He had a great first 9 holes yesterday, 33, 2 under, second hole, 3 bogeys. I mean, you know, if you could just play par 3, bogey-free golf. I mean, he had 3 bogeys, had made a 1 over. He's still in it as of 3 days left to go. Kobe Bryant, a huge fan in China. They're hanging up the walls of the Raptors to see
the man that Jerry West considers the greatest Laker that ever played the game. And he says only because of the fact that the personnel that Kobe had around him, Kobe took him a long way, especially when Shaq left. And he said something that was so profound. He said, you know, Magic didn't win a championship without Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And James Worthy didn't help. Carmelo Anthony, some talk about him going to L.A. in the future. He recently says no, but time will tell us. It's Friday night, fights at Madison Garden, 9 o'clock tonight. Eddie Murray, the only switch hitter in the elite core of four, only four players in the history of baseball, have ever had over 500 home runs, 500 doubles, and 3,000 hits. He is the only first baseman, only switch hitter, only left-handed man to do it. It's the Jets and the Giants this weekend, and we'll see what happens. Mark Sanchez is on a short leash.
Okay.
As so is somebody in the studio phone. As so is Coach Rex Ryan and the Rangers. They had a press conference the other day that the Rangers are going to play a couple of outdoor hockey matches at no place else than the legendary Associated Madison Square Garden. How I got you in my mind, at Yankee Stadium. And with that, let's take a quick plug, come on back, talk about these fights tonight. The thoughts of Lennox Lewis. There are some people who thought Lennox Lewis was a great champion. I never saw Lennox as a great champion. You know, I saw Lennox as a fine champion. I don't know if Lennox Lewis and Dusty, you and Harold and Rooney could, because I don't have Lennox Lewis in my top 10. Now, Harold may dissect this differently. You too, Dusty. You know, I thought he was a very good champion. I don't know how you can get knocked out cold by two guys. You know, in the second fight, Oliver McCall. No, he didn't beat Oliver McCall. Oliver McCall just stopped. He was so,
yeah, knocked him standing up.
Yeah, you know what I mean. But we're right back in just a second, gang. Now, they got a fight on tonight, Lennox Lewis, Ray Mercer. Your opinion of both of those guys?
I mean, you know, fair heavyweights. That's about all you can say, you know. I mean, just average-type heavyweights. Well, nothing special about them. Ray Mercer can punch, and then Lennox Lewis can punch. But, you know, anything outstanding about them, no. I mean, you know, Lennox, he had to play very careful. He's a very careful fighter because, you know, he didn't have the best chin in the world. He know one thing he had was a good right hand, but he didn't have the best chin. He know if any heavyweight hit him, you know he can go. And he knew that because that's going to be always play cautious to the win. And that was his whole thing. Ray Mercer was just a robot type of fighter, just a, you know, tough guy that can punch and game, but he didn't have no real boxing type of
skill
that to deal with the guys that was out there that had those, you know, smartness. You know, he was just a tough guy, you know. Came to fight, and you know, he was just all that. So it was nothing that you're gonna jump up and down and you know wanted to go see. I mean, if you saw him in a good fight, you know he's gonna give you a good fight. But anything special? No, I think you know as people, you know, when you're coming from New York and you know California, you look for fighters with talent, you look for style, you look for excitement, you look for something unique. And Ray Mercer didn't have that. And Lennox Lewis didn't have that either. That's because you can never put them. You don't hear their name, you know, Lennox Lewis' name with the top 10 or the top 15 of the heavyweight division of guys. You know, just
well, what about you had two other guys on that, three other guys on that card that were champions. Tim Witherspoon from Brownsville. What do you think about Tim?
Tim was, like I say, he wasn't nothing exciting. Tim was just a game, gutsy guy kind of fighter. That's all he was. You know, just game, gutsy, and, you know, he wanted to come, you know, came from the hood, and he came to win as heavyweight champion, make some money, and that's what it was all about. It was nothing, like I said, nothing special about Tim Witherspoon. He was just, you know, just a game guy, you know. Let me just show you a point. Ali had a style that everybody just, he just amazed everybody because he was so fast as a heavyweight, and he was one of the fastest heavyweights we ever seen. Joe Frazier had a style that was so aggressive, so meanful, and so determined, but there was a style there. There was something there you saw. Joe Louis had a style, you know.
Trademark.
These guys had, Rocky Marciano had a style, you know, aggressive, just blow, don't blow, you know, I mean, they had styles. You know, you got to have something to bring people out. These guys ain't had nothing like that. There was nothing exciting about those guys. You know, they walk around, pop, pop, jab, pop, pop, and look for, you know, hope they drive their big punch on the guy and the guy fall. But, you know, it was nothing like the guys I just mentioned and everything. And that was the whole thing about the...
What you saying?
I mean, Jack Johnson had a style.
Correct. Also, they had a style, they had a trademark, they had the signature, they had charisma. You had
right.
Two other guys on this card that night. Bobby Chess, light heavyweight champion. Your thoughts on him, Al?
Bobby was a little crafty little guy. I mean, you know, I liked the Bobby. When you know if he was on that night, he was gonna give you a good fight. I mean, I liked Bobby. He's a little crafty little fighter, man. He was game. You know, he had his great moments in some fights, but he just one of those guys that. You know, you would go pay and see. I mean, Bobby, I give Bobby a lot of credit. I like Bobby Chess.
Wow. Okay. Although the night against Holyfield, Harold, he didn't look like exactly what he was—a puffed up middleweight.
Hold on. That's good. I'm glad you led into that. I mean, that's another name. He was on that card tonight. In fact, you remember Rooney? I think the fight ended about the second, third round. The same thing happened to him that happened to Dwayne Bobby. Norton hit Bobby in the throat. Vander hit Chaz in the throat, and that was all she wrote. Your thoughts, and then you guys can throw it around too on Vander Holyfield, Harold.
Oh, Vander is a great fighter. Let me just say that because Vander, he's gonna give it to you all. Vander is one of those, you know, he's one of those do or die kind of fighters, and he's coming to bring. He's coming to come to war, and you love to see Evander because you know what it's gonna be. He's not gonna fall down for nobody. I don't care what era Evander would be. You know who Evander will remind you of? Edward Charles. Good, you know, had that technique of boxing.
Yeah,
combination of combinations as a heavyweight. He was just like an Edward Charles kind of fighter, and that was the doing of Georgie Benton. Georgie Benton, you know, giving him the schooling, teaching him and everything. But the thing was, anybody talks about it, you got to put Evander Holyfield right up there in the top 15 light heavyweights. He's right in there, man, because he's
a warrior, Howard, a warrior.
Yeah, he bring it to you, man. I don't care who it is. He's going to bring it to you. So he would have brought it to Ali, you know what I'm saying, or Joe Frazier. I mean,
you know what nobody ever talks about, which I think is one of the great classics of all time? The first rumble, the very first rumble between Holyfield and Dwight Muhammad Cowie, a.k.a. Dwight Braxton, a bona fide war from the jump.
Right. And then that was the first time I really saw Holyfield when we found out and see what he was made out of and what he was made. Yeah. He was a man. He showed that he was a show enough man. And so... from that point on, you knew what you was getting, and I respect him, man. I respect Holyfield. He's right up in there. He has nothing to be ashamed of. I just wish he'd stop fighting, but you know that's on him. But the fact is, you know, he's got nothing to worry about in life. If he just would just carry himself, you know, the way he wanted to let his name carry him, like Ali did, he has nothing to be ashamed of. But people respect him because he was a warrior. He ain't let nobody down at no time. Believe me. At no time. So I mean, he was right up there with the great ones. He really was. I mean, I would have loved to see him and Joe Louis go at it, boy. It would have been a very interesting.
Oh, that
would have
been a piercing brawl, Al.
Somebody, I think that would have been a hell of a fight. I'm gonna tell you right now, that would have been one hell of a fight.
Yeah,
boy.
It really would have been a brawl, absolute. All hands on deck.
Them two guys would not have took two steps back in that fight.
No.
They were, oh my God, I could have saw that fight going, boy. Woo! That
I mean,
awesome.
I was just talking about a monstrous train crash right there. My word.
Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, so that's what I'm saying. You can put Holyfield in that kind of category, and he would have stood up. And that's saying something. That's saying something. You can say you can put him in that kind, because them guys can fight. And I'm saying I can see him fighting Joe Louis and see him be one hell of a fight. One hell of a fight.
But no, talking about him, like you said, no matter how big the guy was, I was watching ESPN Classics a few days ago, Harold Dusty, and he's fighting a Riddick Bowe, who he's going up about 3 inches tall, and what, about 6 pounds? And he's
right.
warring with this guy, man.
He took the fight to Riddick Bowe.
Wow, he's warring with this monster toe to toe.
Yeah.
Right. And Riddick could have been a hell of a fight. A hell of a fighter if he didn't eat so much. I mean, but he just didn't want, you know, after he won the title, that was his downfall. And But Riddick, like you said, he took it to Riddick. And Riddick was, what 240, two something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah,
yeah.
A real big old heavyweight? I mean, God.
Yeah, real big.
and had some tools. And that was the bad, you know, that's the amazing part about the fight. Riddick Bowe was a real good, crafty fighter. I mean, he wasn't no you know, old, a guy that you could say they gave him the heavyweight title. No, he won it. But the fact is that he could fight. But, you know, Holyfield was right there with him. I mean, that's how come you got to praise Holyfield. He's definitely one of those warriors you got put in the top 10.
They tell you they hit each other with bombs.
Oh, yeah.
Out.
Yeah. Holyfield took a shot, man. That's one thing I said. He took some shots, boy. I mean, he is amazing how he got through all that. Is you know, as small as he was, you know, but he took some shots with some heavyweights, and he wasn't scared of no heavyweight in the world. That was him. I mean, nobody. I mean, I take my hat off to him. He's one of my favorite fighters. He's right in there with Griffin with me. I mean, he wasn't my favorite fighter. Didn't duck nobody. He ain't duck nobody.
Exactly.
You know, whoever was out there, come on with it. I mean, he just ain't duck nobody. That was my kind of guy.
Yeah.
Hey, Howard, I know that you and Dusty were both warriors. I know you were a warrior, Howard. I know Dusty was. But watching Riddick Bowe and Holyfield and Carl Wee and them guys trade bombs, I just saw the other one the other day with David Tour and Ikea Bucci, which was another war.
Yeah,
hey, Howard, Dusty, at what point do you say, look, I've given them enough, given the fans enough time to go home, man. We got given them enough time to go home.
Getting back to Holyfield, I mean, that first fight with Tyson was a classic. I mean, this was a war of attrition by a man that was just a little smarter than the baddest man on the planet.
He was much smarter than the man.
Well, you're right. Much smarter than the... And he outboxed him. I mean, Tyson came in with all his tools and everything, but Holyfield just stood there and whittled him down. And
hey,
you can see, by the ninth or tenth round, Tyson was saying,
know,
oh, I'm in the wrong place, man.
Well, you know,
hold on, hold on. You know, that Tyson was done. Interesting fight with his...
No, he was not done.
I got you. This is not for discussion or debate, okay? The Tyson that Holyfield fought, you're never telling me the same Tyson that was back in 1991. Okay, even if you think he could win, he's not the same age-wise, he's not the same guy. He's not the same guy that... would have fought Holyfield.
He certainly wasn't the same after that 3 years, Doc. No question about that.
Huh?
He certainly wasn't the same after 3 years.
He's not the same guy, and he's not the same guy after coming out of prison. Okay? I mean, it's not for discussion today. He can't be the same guy. Okay? And Holyfield, in fighting him, remember Marion Boykin talked about that. Marion said, you know, Doc, I like Evander in this fight. And Evander said, reason why he won the fight because, and he said in his career, there was too many fights that he fought when he should have boxed. Remind me of Kevin Kelly, Harold, a guy that was a greyhound. He tried to act like a pit bull. Evander said, you know, there's too many times I fought guys when I should have boxed them. And to me, the perfect example of a good big man not being a good big man was Riddick Bowe. Riddick Bowe lost to Holyfield. Now, he beat him 2 out of 3 times, but he only beat him the last time because Evander threw a showdown. I was in the ringside when he threw his shoulder out. Next round, Evander got knocked out. But the Tyson, it was very interesting to see them. They fought in 1991 with Tyson not going to jail and with Evander with the mindset of fighting him instead of boxing him. And everybody knows that Evander is a guy that uses that head. Notoriously known to be a headbutter. Doesn't justify, you know, like Marion Boykin said, if the door's locked at your front door and you can't get in, you don't burn the house down. But, you know, it doesn't validate
But it was some of the reason why, I guess, you know, Mike acted like he did. But the first fight, if they fought the first time they were supposed to fight, it's a whole different fight than the fights we had after. That was not the same Mike Tyson, which is, you look at the attributes of the Muhammad Ali, which I say, is that, you know, people don't look at, you know, Ali beat all the great fighters of his era, and he's passing time. I mean, Holyfield is a great, and Holyfield, too, you know, you look at Holyfield's resume, everybody the Holyfield beat, he reminds me of Rocky Marciano. You know, Marciano beat guys that were past their prime. So did Holyfield. He beat an old Larry Holmes, okay? He beat an old George Foreman, and he beat a done and finished Mike Tyson. I mean, you know, it's there.
The prison time was what ruined Mike Tyson, but he was still young enough to come back. To come out and fight Riddick Bowe on an over even scale in that first fight. What are you telling me he was done? He wasn't done.
Can I say something, Doc? Can I say something? Please let me say something. The problem is that you guys don't understand. Dusty, know this, okay? When a guy has boxed a guy in the gym four or five times and he whipped his behind in the gym four or five times, when I get in that boxing ring where nobody knew that we boxed before, and
exactly.
I beat your ass. I'm gonna beat your ass in that boxing ring. Okay,
job,
that's what y'all don't
job,
know.
Right.
They used to box before. Okay,
well,
you
know,
do it
really
now.
The point you bring up is one that was brought up, and this is again why I tell you, you hear and you
they
learn.
They were the Olympic Village together, man.
Forget the Olympic Village. It was the fact that
no, don't forget
you,
nothing because that's where they started.
Just hang on. Listen to what I have to say. Okay? And you saw what Harold is talking about. Because, in fact, you're the one that told me. Because when you went to the George Willis, the real book signing that they had down at the thing, you talked about that whole pool, the whole video that we didn't see, that bounce thing. You talked about the whole video thing, which is that whole thing of, you know, the guy may be a 20-game winner, and this guy's a 265 hitter, but for some reason, when he bats against him, it's 400, you know. There's certain guys that just have your number, and you're saying that Evander has always had Mike Tyson's number, correct?
Yes.
In Olympic Village, Mike Tyson says, oh, I beat him. Holyfield says, I know I kicked his ass.
Right.
You know. And that rivalry began from there. And then the showdown when he wanted to bully people in the freaking Olympic camp, and the only one he could bully was, guess who? Holyfield.
Right. There
he
you go.
Off and, Holyfield.
Yeah.
Come on.
That's how Holyfield knew he could beat him. The Holyfield always said,
exactly,
Mike Tyson. And I said to somebody, and I took the bet with somebody, I said, you know what? I'm going to bet on Holyfield because his attitude is really calm. And if you saw that fight, how calm he was going through that whole process, fighting the toughest man in the world, then you know something was wrong. And he was very calm and very, very much know that he was going to win the fight. And that was the whole thing. Because when he said that before he got out in the ring, he said, how do you feel? He said, I'm going to win.
Exactly.
I'm going to win.
There's no way this guy going to beat me.
Yeah.
Because he already had a beat up on mine.
You know that. That's what people don't understand. When somebody's boxed another fighter in the gym, I don't care how or what his record is, 100-0, okay, 100 knockouts. If he boxed a certain person in that drink and they don't box and he beat his ass every day, every time they box, you can believe me, he's going to beat his behind when he gets into that ring with them small gloves on.
Exactly.
How, you know, as a man that's in the fraternity, you look back at Holyfield, how much does it bother you that you know, he just seemed to fell on a guy that was such a great champion, integral part of the game, that fell on such hard times. So how much does that bother you, you to see, he's got no money, the child, I mean, it has to bother you, but I think it touches you even deeper. And then you too, that the guys who've been in the ring, how much does it bother you that the guy that's been seen as so much a credit to the game, and I ask you,
you know,
how Yeah. I asked you too, Harold.
Okay. Go ahead, Harold. You say and I'll say.
How come it seems like that, you know, these guys who've been such a credit had a profound effect on the game,
And I guess this is what you say about the game. But you too, Hal. I mean, how come boxing? I mean, like I said before, how could boxing let Joe Frazier's gym close? How could boxing somehow? I mean, well, in the case of Holyfield, it's what Rooney's saying. Rooney feels that, you know, he can't do anymore. But a lot of people thought the last title fight he got a bad shot. You know, if he wins that fight, he's a champ again. And what is it that, you know, I don't know. The guys like this and everybody's, everyone is good. I guess one thing, Harold, where are all his friends now, Harold? Where are all the people that said we're a great champion? Where are all the people that he helped? Where are all the people that he helped elevate? Where are all the people in the game that could do something for him that are not, Harold?
Well, you know, it's like in any sports or any entertainment world, anybody that's got money, everybody's around you when you got things rolling. It's just that you'll find out what kind of friends you got when things are on the downside. And that goes for everybody in life. I mean, you just got those people that's gonna try to get as much as they can out of you and say they're your friend, but really they're not your friends. And you just gotta know how to hold on to your money. And knowing who to say no to, and just pretty much keep another person at arm length. Let me just say this: a friend is pretty much not going to ask you for no money if he's doing okay. All right, a person that's always looking for something. I mean, you know, basically that's not your friend. It's just a guy that's trying to hold on. But if a friend if he's in bad shape, his finances is bad. Okay. Then you know he knows his situation where it is. But guys that you have a guy that you ain't never seen before, and he's now hanging around and saying jokes and all that, and being the man. Then you know these guys come about. But Holyfield and them, you know, Holyfield was okay for a while. He just his whole thing was them girls. I'm gonna tell you that right now. Them girls got Holyfield problems, boy. That's all them women he had and them babies he got out there, that was his downfall right there. That was a lot with his downfall. And you know them babies and them mamas, they can take a lot out you, boy.
That was what he put out.
You know, Holyfield wasn't no Valentino now, you know, so you understand when he was little, I always keep going back to this fella, but you know, he wasn't no Valentino, so his looks wasn't the greatest looks in the world. And his clothing, you know, you could see he wasn't no big, you know, no real suave dresser. I mean, so basically, when he was coming up, he ain't never had no women. I can tell you that right now. He really ain't had no women. He didn't get no women until he started boxing and he turned pro and all that. That's when he started. He probably got his first little thing when he turned pro. Because, you know, he wasn't no, you know, real attractive guy and all that stuff. So, you know. And he didn't look like he could rap that well. You know, I mean, you know, there's a certain thing that you got to have to mess with these women in the world. And I don't think he
that's an interesting take on it, Hal. Very interesting.
<You know?
laughs>
and you know what it was? It was his first time and he got all these women. Then, you know, you got to look at it, Mel, is that you got all this money. Now, all of a sudden, you got Holly Berry looking at you and talking to you. You got Miss America talking to you. You got these beautiful women talking to you. And
you know how you and I had this discussion, an awesome discussion it was, and it was a pleasure hearing that from somebody who's been there and done that, like you on the championship level. We had this discussion out about guys finally getting the bright light and the gorgeous babes. We had an incredible discussion about that, and basically that's what you said about the whole thing with that. When guys finally are starting to make the big time, and you got all these foxes out the woodwork, and these star babes, and so on.
Yeah, and what happened, these guys get lost into this whole thing about these women and everything, and people cheer, yeah, you the champ, and you know, you think you got authority with you, but one time you just have that kind of prestige or that kind of a command over people and everything. Now you have it, so basically you want to keep it going. So to keep it going, you keep certain people around you, so you're handing out money, and you got these girls, and they need money, they got problems, so money's going everywhere, and you're not thinking. Let me just say this: you never, when you got that kind of money, coming in, you never ever think you're gonna go broke. You can't even see yourself going broke. Because you got $10 million. You ain't never, some guys can't even spell $10 million. But the fact that they got that kind of money, and that's where the downfall got it, and they never got, and they booked, you know, the sad part about it, they didn't have nobody they can talk to. Nobody grabbed them and say, hey, man, you need to slow this down. You need to cut this out. You know, that's the sad part about it. Didn't have nobody there. And for him to really, he should be listening to, or, you know, school him on women and school him on people trying to grab all his money. You know, that's why I give Larry Holmes a lot of press. You know what I mean? Because Larry stayed low-key. Man, he had his little fun, but he stayed low-key. He got his wife, stayed with his wife, boom. She took care of things. Hey, you know, a few things happened, but, hey, it was nothing like, you know, you're going to go broke. And Larry told me one time, he said, Harold, I stay in my little town where I'm not going to be going searching for no big town where I'm the only. He said, I like where I am because I'm the only one in town that has.
And that's true, Harold. He's the king. Hey, Harold, he started off in Eastern PA, and that's where he is now.
That's where he is. He said he will never. He owns that little town he's in. The city pays him rent for the building that he owns. Okay.
PA.
Yep. So that's what I respect Larry for doing that. He said, man, I don't want to go out there with them big dogs and them guys that got. He said, 'cause my money ain't big like that. He said, I ain't like that. He said, I don't live in that world. And I respect Larry when he told me that. I give him all the respect in the world.
Right. You're right, House. And like you said, in Easton, he is king.
Yeah.
I wanted to bump something off you, too. I don't know if Dusty's down on here, but Doc and I have been having this running debate, Harold. Doc and I have been having this running debate about the best Mike Tyson ever was. I wish Doc was here. I want him to come on and say his thing about it. Can you hear us, Doc?
Can't hear you, Doc. I don't know where you're at.
Can't hear you at all, Doc. Anyway, Harold, I'm not going to just give Doc side, but for the most part, Harold, Doc said the best Mike Tyson ever was, his best night, was the Michael Sphinx destruction. I say his best night, the best I ever saw Mike, and, you know, obviously I followed his career. I thought the best Mike was the night he became the youngest world champion ever and destroyed Trevor Burbick. I thought that's the night. I thought that was the best mic that I had ever seen, Harold. Doc says it's the mic that destroyed Michael Spinks in that so-called super fight.
Well, I think that, you know, and Dusty can verify, when you get on a roll and you start, you know, everything just starts clicking for you, you know, that when Mike was coming up and Mike was going through that, you know, that whole heavyweight procedures, and they came up with these, you know, like you said, he started knocking out Michael Spinks and all the rest of the guys. That was Mike's best moment of his career, okay, because he was focused. He was there. And I'm going to say this to you. He was more of a Mike type because Cus D'Amato was around. When Cus died, that was the end of Mike Tyson, okay? That was the end of Mike Tyson because Cus kept him on point. And you can see how Mike was always focusing and had that radar ready and everything. He used to bounce around in the ring and all the time when he was getting ready for a fight. After Cus did, he stopped bouncing. He stopped not moving the head, you know, getting
right,
ready.
Right, the head movement,
you know,
was going, yeah.
And all that, all
everything
the things
was
that
one
got him.
Shot. And how everything was one shot after that, too.
Not
the combinations
shot, right,
that he used to put together.
Right, and that was his downfall right there. But that's what hurt Mike Tyson, Cus D'Amato. And I'm going to tell you what really put the finishing touch, when Jim Jacobs died. That was it.
Yeah.
Mike was finished.
Yeah,
Mike,
you're right,
finished
about that. Because he was like
Mike
the last link to, like, the Cus, to the, he was like the last link to the Cus times, out. Jim Jacobs, when all of them, that's like the last link to Cus and him.
Oh, yeah, you know, Mike went into depression. See, everybody don't know, Mike went into depression. And that, you know, that he had two people that he loved, he cared about. All right, uh-huh. And you know, when you have that kind of soul, because I know I went through a process like that. When you have people that you love and care for so much, it's devastating. It's devastating, especially when they're going so, you know, you feel they're going so early. But my point is that you never think there's anything they're supposed to go. You know, how could they go? You know, that's how you feel that. Why are they going? You know, and so that was the downfall for Mike Tyson. And then when Don King came along, forget it, that was over.
And you know something else? What's especially difficult is somebody in your profession, man, where you want to step through that square, man, and walk down that aisle and step in that square, man, you got to be focused, man.
Yeah,
I have no idea until I started fighting an amateur smokers how focused you got to be when you can fight out. But one slip up, you get it on the chin, you're gone, man.
Right. You know, and the thing is that Mike didn't have, like I said, he didn't have them people talking in his ear. You know, when you're dealing on that stage and you're fighting certain dangerous guys and everything, you got to have people that really, that's something you got to give Emil Griffin so much credit, is because of the fact and how great of a champion. He didn't duck nobody. And at the same time, but he had that support with Gil Clancy. And that talk he's always with Gil having, and having that support. And if you ain't got those people to be on your side and in your corner, you're gonna have a whale of a time in your life in boxing. You cannot be a boxer. Pretty much you can't even be an athlete by yourself. You can't do nothing by yourself. That's what tickled me with a lot of guys when they get up there and say, oh, I did this by myself. No, you ain't did nothing by yourself. You know, everything that you do in this world, somebody done taught you how to do it. And you got to keep on teaching you how to do it. And that's where, when you think you have all the answers, that's when I know you're going to be defeated. Because that's what's going to happen to you. Because nobody can stand that and keep doing something on a high note and say they got all the answers to it. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, another part that really kills me about watching today's fighters is how, as you said, a guy will be 20-0, 22-0, with like, I don't know, like 18 knockouts, destroying everybody. And he's finally fighting somebody who's going to be fighting back for the first time, not some guy that's a part-time cab driver, but he's actually fighting some guy, you know, that's going to come to rumble. And you'll see, man, that he's used to taking guys out in 2-3 rounds top, and he's fighting this guy, and here this guy, 5-6 rounds, this guy's still here. No, homeboy don't know what to do. He's in panic mode. This corner don't know what to tell him now.
Right. And you know what happens, too, and this is the sad part about it, is that that kid that you're looking at that was doing all that greatness that he thought was winning fights, when he loses that fight and really gets destroyed, his whole image, his whole ego goes down. And when he goes into that depression, that's when you see those kids start doing the drugs, drinking, and just, you know, tearing them up, because they know what they thought they were was not really what they were. And that ego gets torn down like that, that's where they fall apart. And you see it happen all the time. You see it happen all the time.
And the thing that shocked me, Howard, is a lot of these guys who are 20-0, 22-0, 24-0, 17 knockouts, 18 knockouts, 10, 15 of them in the first round. And then, like you said, Howard, they start fighting cab drivers and dudes that can rumble a little bit that ain't going no place. And I'll give you a perfect example, how I remember coming up, and this isn't a Mike Tyson all the bit. This kid, Alex the Destroyer Stewart. And Alex is this thrilling guy, running guys right out the ring, Howard.
Right,
you know what
that
is. I don't have to tell you.
Alex
the Destroyer Stewart. Alex is running guys out the ring. And as soon as he started with these top-notch guys, Howard, they started smacking them around, man, because these guys wasn't going no place.
Right. Hey, you know what? I want to get back to our friend, Dusty. I'm gonna say this, and you're gonna follow me with this, right? Mel, I'm gonna show you a good example of what I was talking about. Why Mike Tyson was gonna never beat Holyfield. When Sugar Ray Mosley, when Mosley fought that kid, what is his name? Oh man, what was that kid? Oh God. What is that kid that beat Mosley? First guy to beat Mosley.
Oh, talking that passed away. Yeah, I know you're talking about. Yeah, right. And it was kind of surprised when Mosley couldn't beat that kid.
Right, because you know why? They fought in the amateurs, and he beat Mosley all the time in the amateurs.
No wonder how. That's what you said earlier. Now, Mosley could beat all these guys, but he couldn't beat that kid.
Couldn't beat that kid. That kid had his number. That's what I'm saying. And I bet it on the kid, because when I found out, somebody told me, how that boy beat Mosley every time they fought in the amateurs. I said, what? He said, man, they fought four times. He beat them four times easy. I said, damn. I knew he was going to beat him just now, bro. And now, that's a good indication of what I'm trying to say. When I'm beating your butt every day, no matter where it's at, and we get into the real thing, I'm going to still beat your butt. You can have that 100-0 record if you want to, but when we finish, it's going to be 101. That's what it's going to be.
Well, that's a good job, Ron, because I remember when he lost to that kid, I was kind of surprised. Like, yo, this kid beat Shane. I don't really know this kid too well. And this kid beat Shane. And you're right. Out, sure enough, not that long after that, they had the rematch. Shit smacked Mosley around again.
Yeah, he's right. And easy. I mean, it was okay even the contest.
No.
And so that's what I'm trying to say. That's what I'm trying to say. Doesn't make no difference. Don't make no difference. Somebody else could have been beating his butt all the time. You will never beat him. And remember when they made the Holyfield and Mike Tyson fight, they thought Holyfield was finished. Remember he had those couple of fights that he looked real bad in.
He did look bad.
He looked really bad, and you know they thought he was finished. They thought Holyfield was finished, and Holyfield said, "Nah, I'm gonna win this one." Because he had Mike
after
Tyson
the Michael Moran fight. We thought he was done after Michael Moran.
Right.
How?
Yeah. That's right. That's what I'm saying. That's what I said. That's what I'm saying. He had the man's number. There was no way. Mike can never, ever be Holyfield. Never, ever, ever, ever. I don't care what time it was. Could never beat Holyfield.
And then one thing I had to say about him that helped him in the Mike fight, and I don't have to tell you what this means, Harold, he had a huge heart, man. Holyfield had a huge heart.
That was the whole thing. That's what he knew. That's what he knew about it. He knew that Mike didn't have a big heart. But he knew that his heart was bigger than Mike. Yeah, he knew Mike didn't have that big of a heart. He knew that. He said that. That's because he kept laughing. Everybody talking about the baddest man. I'm not that bad. This, you find the baddest man on the planet. Mike, your host would like to laugh. He said, please.
That's funny. But, you know, I know Mike. And, you know, I know his mindset going into this. I know, you know, I've talked to him, you know, many times about these things, how, and I know his mindset going into the fight was, you know, basically like most fighters, I'm going to destruct and destroy. Once this guy takes my power, he ain't going to be around more. But you're right, Harold Holyfield had a huge heart, man.
He really did. And that's, you know, so that's what I'm saying. You know, I give Mike all the praise, man. I love Mike. Mike's a good guy, man. He's a real good guy. But, you know, Mike knew his limits, man, and he knew Holyfield. But the reason why Mike took the fight with Holyfield is because of those fights with Moore. He looked so bad in those fights and everything that they just knew he was finished, and that's the reason why the fight was made.
Well, you know, nobody
people forget. People forget that you know, as Harold said, no, Holyfield was seen to be washed up, done. People don't know. Don King pulled Holyfield off the scraps. Don had to take Holyfield to the Mayo Clinic. So, you know, I mean, the first time I ever heard that the fighter had to get examination beyond the commissions. They took him to the Mayo Clinic. To the Mayo Clinic, okay? He was seen done and finished, you know, and to Don's. I mean, Don has a good eye, a talent. I mean, I tell you, guys who really have a good eye for boxing talent, DK, Harold.
Don ain't had no good eye for no boxing talent.
Well,
don't start.
Well, how? Just what you do, just be quiet. Don had a good eye for boxing talent, and his name was Duke Ray. You know what I mean? But the point is, Don knew the guys. I mean, I never forget, Harold. You told me. You had made Chavez and Camacho. Don, okay, made the fight. Harold, tell me what Duke told you.
Don,
okay.
It was not Don. It was Duke Dern. Don didn't know nothing about Chavez. He didn't think
Harold, you're not listening to me. It's very important, son. Look, I said, okay, Don made the fight with Camacho and Chavez. That's the way he told me. And it was Duke who told you and who called the fight off, and Duke told you why, Al?
Because he knew Camacho, he would never see Camacho. He know Camacho going to beat Chavez
at. I told people, if he ever fought him, he saw him two times, when he introduced him and when he raised his hand after the fight. And
yeah,
no,
Duke was the one that was guiding that situation.
Yeah, it
Duke was the
mean,
one that got that. Don didn't even know who Chavez was. Let me just say that to you, okay? He didn't
wow,
know. And when,
wow.
And Duke Dern's the one that brought Chavez to Don. All right,
wow,
let's get that
but
straight.
Out.
Duke still brought to Chavez. That's how come I knew about Chavez. That's how come I knew. Because me and Duke, because they both was coming at the same time.
Good, Al. Good.
And so me and Duke used to be, we talk every morning. And we cracking jokes and stuff. And I'm saying, man, I kept saying, man, when you gonna bring that slow ass Mexican with so we make this fight? You run around here with 30-0 record and ain't fight nobody, fight somebody. And Camacho was like about 18-0 at the time or something like that. So Duke said, man, he said you got it. He said I gotta take your talk, take all that nonsense. I gotta take you out to dinner. I gotta pay for your drink because you the man now. You said you right. He said I ain't gonna mess with you right now. I said, I'm going to call Don, man, make the fight. He said, you go ahead and call him, but I'm going to tell him not to take the fight. I said, I'm going to call him up. And me and Duke used to go like that every day. And then next thing he said, hey, man, I'll call you up later, man. Let's go to our favorite place and have our dinner. And, I mean, that's what we did, man. So Don ain't discovered nothing of Julio Chavez. Why do you think he put Julio Chavez on a card with another major fight? Where the fact is that he had Julio on another TV channel and have his other main event on another channel and just tie up the darn whole TV situation. He didn't know that Chavez was that good, and he didn't know that he was drawing that big. He didn't know all those Mexicans watching Julio Cesar Chavez instead of those other guys. That's what Don didn't know. Don't put that Don had an eye. Don ain't had nothing. He had the right people that knew to tell him what to do, but he didn't have nothing. He didn't know what Julio Cesar Chavez was.
If you listen once again, I said Don had, as Richard Pryce, he had the people. He had the people. And also now, Hal, didn't Camacho sign with Don, I believe, after he left you in the garden, if I'm correct? Yeah, I'm correct. Didn't Camacho sign with Don?
Yeah, he signed with Don, yeah. Don bought him a Lamborghini.
Wow.
That's
simple
as
that, why
he went.
Just quickly, I got a serious question for Hal concerning the late, great
Rudy, hold on. You know, I know I gave you a few minutes. This ain't the Howard Weston show, okay? I mean, it's bad enough, you know, he didn't stole our girl, okay?
Doc, we've both been in the square circle, man. I've always been absolutely spellbound by pugilists, man, just based on what they do.
Yeah, but I mean, he didn't steal that girl, man. You know, the girl said the other day, if anything is wrong with her, she called him Dr. Howe. You know, she ain't worried about her medical plan. She ain't worried about her family doctor. She called him Dr. Harold Weston.
But you got to understand, this ain't nothing new up down my road. You know what I mean? that'll come out and have no problem like them other guys.
I remember, man. I remember they told the story, and my girl Liz used to always let Howard. I mean, they told that Howard went on a trip, man. And there were two of the finest girls in the bar. And Cash said, whoa, look at them over there, man. Those Howard girls. The guy said, both of them? The guy said, yeah. Yeah, we're going to be playing back in a minute. And give a plug, look back on the weekend, continue our chat here. Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio, on the Stress and Guard Network, Sports in Depth, Friday, looking back. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the is Live Talk Radio on the Fluxy Garden. Now, let's take a look back at the weekend review. The Mets swept the Rockies, killing last night. Killing lead, tremendous piece of pitching last night, leading the Mets to a 2-1 victory in a 3-game sweep of the Colorado Rockies. And there's a lot of talk of extension for the manager of the Mets, Terry Collins, Ken Green. Okay, if we can. Giants and the Jets open their preseason seasons. Pittsburgh Steelers will be the foe for the New York Giants. And the big question is, what will Mark Sanchez do? How long of a win will he get? And what's the barometer for the Jets season yesterday? PJ started. Tiger Woods had a great first 9 holes. And some triple bogeys put him 1 under. Exactly the Tiger. Yeah, Tiger went in yesterday. He was rolling right along. Then he shot a 38 on the back 9 after hitting a 33 on the first, and he's 1 over. No magic touch for the pro. Rob Leverich had a miracle shot to get him into the PGA, but yesterday wasn't the best of days for him. Alex Rodriguez comes home tonight in the Bronx, and the question is, what will they do? How will they react to the great Alex Rodriguez? Roy McIlroy, he struggled all year, but he fired a 169 yesterday, and I remember seeing him 2 years ago here at the tennis tournament that they had at the Garden. The Rangers plan to step by step on. The Rangers will be playing an outdoor game at Yankee Stadium this season. That was announced yesterday. We also remind you that MSG Boxing, Lenny Lewis, Ray Mercer, co-hosted by Mark Freeman, greatest amateur fighter of all time, and the exciting John Duddy, Larry Torres. Thank you so much. Justin Tuck, the back tightened up on him, and so he's come back for the season. At the moment, it looks like it's a lot like last 2 years, but he'll be on hold, and it's only preseason. No sense putting him out there and getting him hurt. Then I'll get him to play. And once again, the Rangers will be playing an outdoor game at the legendary Yankee Stadium. Now, let's look at the schedule for the week. Yankees have Detroit coming in. They'll play on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then the Angels come in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. The Mets, now they're on the road. They're going to play Arizona at Arizona, and then they got 3 games with the Dodgers, and then they close the weekend out with the San Diego Padres. And last night, Max Scherzer became baseball's first 17-game winner. He won his 12th straight victory, and cleared by beating Cleveland, the Tigers beat Cleveland 10-3. He's 17-1. He allowed 2 runs last night, 4-7 innings. And it looks like it may be the third straight year that a major award will be won by a Tiger. Van Lander won the MVP, and Cy Young 2 years ago, Chittenden won the MVP. Last year, it was a Triple Crown winner who won the MVP. And this year, it looks like there's no question that Scherzer, pronounced his name wrong, Kimmy, will be the Cy Young Award winner. So that Detroit is rocking and rolling, so they're playing good baseball. Hats off to my buddy there, Jim Leland. Ex-Yankee Russell Martin pinch-hit single with 2 outs in the 10th. Listen, Pittsburgh to a 5-4 win over Miami, and it was Pittsburgh's 5th straight win and their 7th win of the season. And they haven't won 70 games in 5 years. Okay, Tim Lincecum, who threw a no-hitter, pitched 1 hit ball for over 8 innings last night as the Giants beat Milwaukee 4-1. Lincecum 6-11. He threw his first career no-hitter back on July 13th. RG3. Didn't play yesterday. Washington beat Tennessee 22-21 in the preseason game. RG was on the side, but he did throw a couple of tosses to excite the crowd. Danny Manziel's family has hired Jim Darrow, an attorney with experience in NCAA matters, as a Heisman Trophy winner before he faced an investigation and whether he was paid to sign. You know, that's very simple. You were or you were not. Stat of the day, 2.08. That's Dillinger's ERA and 11 starts this season at City Field. And with that, let's go back to Harold Weston Jr., Mel Cosell, a.k.a. Little Coco, a.k.a. Rooney, and talk a little more about the sweet science and some things that are happening, some big fights coming up.
Just hang back. Well, doctor, I have one quick question for Harold, if I may. I promise to be brief. What's up, we?
Okay,
now, what was the first thing that went through your mind when you found out that the Macho Man, Hector Macho Camacho, had signed to fight Chapo Rosario?
Nothing. I just thought, I knew he was, you know, I knew Camacho wasn't Camacho, because I told you before, I knew he was, what he was doing at the time. And I was just worried that, you know, Camacho was a kid, man. He had a lot of pride, okay? And he wanted to always win like he's supposed to. But, you know, his whole thing, man, he was into that glamour. I mean, he was going all over the world. And the fact is that he knew he was doing something. He was doing the wrong stuff. And he just didn't have nobody to control him to stop him from doing what he was doing. And that was a downfall of him. For him fighting Capo would have been an easier fight, but he made everything hard on himself by doing them drugs, and that was a bad part about it.
Oh, okay, I know what you're saying. Because when I first heard that, I don't know, I forgot exactly what I was doing, and then I had just heard and got word that, yo, he had signed to fight Chapo, and I was like, oh, yeah, baby. We're going to see what is on now. We're going to see, you know, because at the time, Chapo was like, yo, Hector don't want to fight me, you know. He'll fight all these other guys, he won't fight me, and, you know, Hector was like, yo, bring it on. You know, I don't have no problem with him, man. Bring it on if he think he got it like that. So when I first heard that, I was like, oh, yeah, baby, yeah.
No,
Camacho,
I mean,
Camacho, man, and Chapo, yeah.
Yeah. Camacho would have took him apart if he was, you know, he wasn't himself. He was just a shell of himself, tell you the truth. And, Chapo was this guy like that, because he started hanging out, you know. Like I said, he had the Lamborghini, he had the cars, he had the house, he had $1 million. He was already a millionaire before he even fought for the championship of the world.
Wow.
Okay, you know what I mean?
He had a lot of charisma, Harold, a lot of charisma.
Yeah, I'm telling you, we're making money. We're fighting every month on TV. Fellas, hear what I'm saying. When he had that first TV, we're fighting every month on CBS, NBC, ABC. Every month, we're fighting every month. That was unheard of for the TV network. That was unheard of.
I was watching those fights. You're right.
Right. It was unheard of. They ain't never seen a fighter like that. Every month, we were fighting. And you know what? Whoever you want us to fight, it had no bearings on it. That was the amazing part about it, man. That was the amazing part about it. It didn't make no. We said, go and get whoever you can get. Please, we'll be there. Simple as that. That was so great about having a guy like Camacho, man. Especially when he was at that prime, boy. Unbelievable. That's like having Ali. You know, it's just unbelievable when you have something so great that you know ain't nobody can beat you. Nobody. All you
know, the thing about Ali, Howard, is I really would love to have known what he would have looked like now if they wouldn't have took those 3 years from him. I really want to know how awesome he'd have been without those 3 years stolen.
Oh, that would have been... That would have been a situation that you would never, ever have ever duplicated again in life. I think that if it wasn't for those 3 years, and we all know it, I mean, Joe would have still been Joe, but it would have been a whole different fight with him and Joe if he didn't have them 3 years off. There's no question about that. I mean, we all know that. But he was just unbelievable. And what made him go so long and do the things he did, because he know there were so many people that hate him, that wanted him to lose, that he had no choice but to do the right thing and try to be in shape for very important. But he had no choice because the world was watching him. And they were waiting for that one loss, that one person to beat him. That was the whole thing about Ali. And that's like you said, if he didn't have those 3 years taken away, man, oh, man, I don't know what he might have been.
No, you said that you actually did the Ali Frazier one at the Garden, correct? Because I know you said you had tickets, but you were already in the building anyways, but you were already affiliated, correct?
No, I was doing the boxing so they can get the right angle for the cameras and everything for the fight. So I was already in the building and everything. Let me tell you, I was so clean, fellas. I had this bad jumpsuit. You know, back then was a jumpsuit for guys, right? I had this bad jumpsuit made. This bad jumpsuit, it was, you know, all colors. I had a green jumpsuit with a mink collar to it, okay? And I had these bad alligator shoes, green alligator shoes. and everything. Well, you couldn't tell me nothing. And I had brought my outfit and stuff after, you know, when the fight was over, I showered there and got dressed because when we finished, the show was getting ready, you know, everything was shot. And Ali was in the building already. He was already in the building. He stayed in the building for a fight because he couldn't go outside.
Wow, I didn't know that, Al. That's a little known fact. We didn't know that.
Yeah, he had to stay in the building. He watched me and the other guy box the 15 rounds up in the stand and everything and kept saying, come on, man. I know I don't do that. No, no, come on, man. Come on, Ali. And so we were doing that. And then when I got knocked down, because we had to do a part where I got knocked down, and then I got dropped and I fell. And he said, oh, no, no, that's not in the script. No, 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 that's not in the script. No. You know, so... So then I knocked Joe Frazier down, you know, and then he said, okay, now we're doing the right thing, you know, that kind of thing. So, but it was fun. I mean, it was just amazing how the whole world stopped. I mean, the weigh-in was made in the garden. He couldn't come out the garden no more.
Wow.
He had to stay in Madison Square Garden because the crowd was just, it was just too big. It was just too much commotion out there. They knew he wouldn't been able to get back into the arena because the place, the thing was just packed. Everything, the ticket was sold and people were still trying to get in. And people were trying to find out what hotel he was at and all that. So they just kept him in. They just kept him in the building. And they had they got a room, you know, a suite up there in the garden that they kept him in and everything. That's where he stayed with his people.
Hey, you know, every time they show film of that classic, man, everybody in the joint was dressed fine as wine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just look at that. Everybody, you had to be dressed. If you weren't dressed, you couldn't come there. You couldn't come to the garden. You better not come there with no dungarees and no sneakers.
No, nah, I didn't see no single pair of dungarees, though.
No. That was not the time. I didn't say that right. That was not the time. So, it was, like I said, man, it was just an amazing moment. It was just amazing. And I'm, you know, I'm young at the time. I don't know what's going on. I'm just going by, no, I know Ali. I know Joe Frazier real well and all that. But at the same time, I didn't know this impact, how much this fight did. You know, this is just another championship fight to me. But I didn't know how. I didn't know it stopped the world like it did. I didn't know it stopped the world like it did. It was amazing when you learn about it later on. But I didn't know it did that. I really didn't. I really didn't know who did that.
Well, you know what's funny about it is how it's like everybody knew what they were doing on that night. It's like everybody knew what they were doing that night. You know, whether you were there in the garden or watching on closed circuit, or everybody kind of knew what they were doing that night.
And you know what's so funny about the situation? Madison Square Garden was the first people they came to make the fight, right? Madison Square Garden, and I'm going to show you why everybody's not an expert. Madison Square Garden is supposed to be the expert of boxing, know how to price a place off, knowing how much a situation works. They, when they had a bid for the Ali and Frazier fight, their highest bid was $1.5 million. $750,000 to Frazier, $750,000 to Ali. Okay? $1.5 million. That's how small they were thinking. All right.
Wow.
They would not get in. They stopped bidding because they couldn't go over that $1.5 million. And then when my man went to Lou Fausigno, he went to the guys in L.A. and told them about what he can do to make them money, but he needed the money to make the fight. And he said, "Well, how much you need?" He said, "I need $5 million." Okay, say I need $2.5 million, and that was the highest paid any heavyweight ever got at the time.
Well, a record, all kind of records at the time.
Right, and so when they offered them both $2.5 million, they all jumped at it. All right, but believe me, when they signed them contracts, those times they had sold their souls to that fight. Okay, Ali and Frazier sold their souls of it. All they saw was that $2.5 million, but nobody saw the outlet on how much money this fight is going. Everybody's thinking that the fight's going to make money just on the gate and whatever delayed TV they had, right? That's how they thought this thing was going to be made. But when Lou Fausigno and them, they got on that press conference and they said, how much you think you're going to make for this fight? He said $30 million. Ali jumped out and said, oh, Joe's been robbed. And with nothing they can do. And then everybody, the newsman said, well, how do y'all going to make $30 million? The guy only holds $20,000. He said, no. He said, we're going to have pay-per-view around the country in all theaters that's going to be broadcasting this fight that night of the fight. And sure enough, theaters closed down just to have the broadcast of that fight.
Yeah, that wasn't just a sports event, man. Like you said, that was a happening, a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing.
Yeah, it was. And nobody knew about the closed circuit situation. That's what I'm trying to say to you. Nobody knew it except New Foul Signal.
And at the time, like you said, he was the king of the pay-per-view people. At
there
the
time. You go. That's right. He put everybody on notice, and that's how you got the HBOs and all the others there, because he's the one that described that pay-per-view and how to get it to theaters, and from theaters it went on to now TV.
Once again, who do we give the credit to, Harold?
New Foul Signal.
Wasn't he the guy that Ali Frazier won, correct?
Right, he's the one that came up with the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
He started the pay-per-view.
It's just amazing, man, the whole concept. And you hear it here for your HBO and Showtime to act like it was an inbuilt thing where they manufactured. But Harold just told you who was it. And I remember, Ali said to Joe, after looking back at the kind of figures that was made, and $2.5 million was an astronomical amount of money.
It
was an astronomical amount of money, unheard of. I mean, you had another $500,000. That's as much Sugar Ray had made his whole career. But, Ali turned to Joe and said, hey, Joe, we've been robbed.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was the foresight and vision of him, and it was Jack Kent Cook, the owner of the Angels, of the Lakers, what they saw, and evidently you got to realize that when a guy like Kent gets in it, it's dollar signs all over the place, and he's not getting
that
situation.
That's what Lou Fausto needed him for, because Jack Kent could put the money up. The money had to be guaranteed, and Lou didn't have that kind of money, so he had to go to somebody who can guarantee and put that $5 million up. That money was put into an escrow account for everybody to know that money was definitely there. Okay, but Joe and Ali, they had to sign their lives away. Now, let me just say, I'm going to say how people think they're so smart. Why is it that if they had all these bright men around them, why didn't nobody know about the pay-per-view situation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All they saw was just they made this $2.5 million more than any fighter has ever made at that time, and that was the only thing that they concentrated, not thinking about the overall picture. And that is where Lou Foul Signal got him at. And that's where the whole thing was good.
How do you spell his last name, Lou Powell?
Because I used to work with Lou Foul Signal.
How do you spell his last name?
I don't know, man. You got the wrong person on that one.
Lou Foul Signal, you say? What's his name?
No, Lou Foul Signal. Lou Foul Signal.
Oh, Signal. Lou Foul Signal.
Yeah.
Oh, Foul Signal. It was... I don't think it was so much of...
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. I got his number in my book. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Let me see that.
And it was just, Mark Tappan is the guy known for the HBO, the guy that runs HBO and controls it at HBO, the pay-per-view. And he was saying how Oscar has been the number one pay-per-view fighter, not heavyweight. And you just look at how this thing was interjected, and how it said, with all those people around them, supposed to be money-wise, the figures, Rooney, was so unreal and astronomical, it seemed the only guy that really had a consciousness of what the money value was like was Ali.
Dr. Landau, I think Floyd also is a very big one on the pay-per-view market. Yeah, this house.
His name is spelled F-A-L.
F-A-L.
Yeah,
S-I-C-N-O. Z-N-O?
No, C like in cat. C-N-O.
Okay. Oh, Lou Foul Signal.
Right.
F-I-L-S-I-C-N-O, Lou Falcigno. Well, where's he from, Harold?
He's from New York.
Hmm? Lou Falcigno, he's Italian?
I met him. I met him a long time ago before he told me that. He said, Harold, I'm gonna make so much money out of one day that people gonna blow everything, everybody. He told me about the setup, about the pay per view. I used to work with him at one time. Before I worked at the Garden and stuff. I knew about it.
It's just amazing, ladies and gentlemen, that every show, not one show, every single show, there's something you can document of historical significance that's happened. Maybe not even sports. Like I said, their diverse intellect makes sports in depth. Not only sports in depth, but the world in depth. And Lou Falcigno, the man who interjected and brought about pay-per-view, and he did it on the greatest event, the greatest fight, the greatest moment in Madison Square Garden, Ali Frazier won. Gentlemen, give me about 2 seconds, and I'll be right back as we get ready to close out this segment of Sports in Depth. Oh, you can credit with Duke J Productions, Mr. Kukamatsu Jr., and that's all he's down to, one of the people that brings you sports lessons, and where we broadcast most of our shows in Brazil live from beautiful Bela, Porto Alegre, the capital of the state of Ceará, the best freestyle hotel in all of Brazil, and Amungo, my good friend Justino. Parmigiana, his iconic Parmigiana. Green Park, one of the best fire soul hotels in all of the world. All of the world, and should he know, baby, late at night, you want to get it right, that's where you call. We show the iconic Sally Brazza restaurant. And as we get ready to slide down here, close out the segment of Sports Heaven Friday, like I said, once we take a look back at what happened all week long, is Oliver Rodriguez, 2-14 game, a suspension, he's fighting that. He opens tonight in New York City, first homestand game. People may be there to boo him, but they'd rather have 80,000 people there to boo him than 20,000 to cheer him. The question, too, does his friend Derek Jeter, the great Derek Jeter, wears number 2, second to none as a player and as a person. Everything that Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be, everything Mickey Mantle was, a real live American hero. Will Derek play again? That's been the question. The fans kept saying he was going to be ready in spring training, to be ready for opening day, to be ready for the All-Star game. Derek Jeter hit a home run his first time up, he came to the plate, but we haven't seen him since. It's the PGA, the last major of the year. What will Tiger Woods do? And Phil Mickelson comes off to win the British Open. Can he win back-to-back majors? Can Tiger win another major and make it 15? We will see. We got a 17-game winner as our man in Detroit continues to rock and roll. Mets sweep the Colorado Rockies, a 3-game sweep, their first 3-game sweep of the season. There will be outdoor hockey in the house that Jeter beat, built along with Jeter and Mariano Rivera. Let's say, you know, Mariano and Derek Sanderson, Jeter, the Rangers will play a hockey game, open-air hockey game during the course of the season and the forthcoming year. Big fights coming up, Mayweather and Alvarez, and there's Mel Nogueira fighting again in China. Manny Pacquiao against Bam Bam, Brandon Rios, and Marquez against none other than the man who a lot of people really don't feel beat, Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley. Also, we have some fights coming on at this weekend, coming up at B.B. King's, Lou DiBella. B.B. King, his Broadway show, Boxing. We got a press conference, access and workouts, the IBF middleweight champion, Greg Gill. He'll be in town on Monday with number 6 ranked middleweight in the world, Mr. Darren Barker. They will be at Mendez Gym on Monday, and then they fight next coming Saturday on the 17th. And also the Jets will be home, their first home game of the season. They will be playing the Jacksonville Jaguars as they open the preseason and the football season right there. The Giants and the Jets both will be playing football tomorrow. And then on the 24th, it's the big game here in New York City. And I understand why they're 2-2 here for years. I always like Jets and the Giants to play different teams preseason because that's why I see different teams. But the Jets and Giants the last 3 or 4 years, it makes sense. You know, the road team is really not on the road. And the home team is kind of really not at home, as they both were at home. So the Detroit Giants on the 24th will be playing their annual preseason mini bowl. Jerry Reese has told the Giants, you ain't made the playoffs in 3 or 4 years. That's out, gentlemen. That's out. Not only is that out, guess what? They're playing the Super Bowl this year at MetLife Stadium. Guess who should be there? Guess who better be there? Giants have got a big test. The Victor Cruz got back into the fold. They wrapped made the other day by the Mannings, Archie, Eli, and Peyton. So they've entered the world of rap. Who the bum? That's a big question. What happens tonight? It's amazing that when Andy Pettit and Jambi submitted Tinkster, I don't think anybody booed him. I don't think anybody booed him. Now, it's amazing to see. Will they do the same thing with Alex Rodriguez? And you can bet your, as Don said, you can bet your last monies that ain't going to be the case. A-Rod will hear it. It's now 177 days of the Super Bowl gets played in cold weather. I thought that ludicrous. The whole idea of playing Super Bowl was playing on a neutral site with good weather. But we will see. Once again, Max Scherzer, I may be saying that wrong, became the baseball's first 17-game winner. And there's no question he won his 12th straight game. There's no question he's got the Cy Young Award locked up. And it will be the third straight year that a major award in baseball will be won by Detroit Tiger. We had a Triple Crown winner last year. And the year before that, Jason Verlander won both the MVP and the Cy Young Award. Don't see how that happened. That's the one to Curtis Granderson. But that's baseball for you. And this year, it's no question that the Cy Young Award winner will be coming out of Detroit once again. Looking at baseball last night, the Detroit Tigers won their 12th straight. The Pittsburgh Pirates won their 5th straight and their 7th game win of the year. Ex-Yankee Russell Martin pitched a single with 2 outs in the 10th. Tipped the host Pittsburgh over Miami 5-4 on Thursday for the Pirates' 5th straight win, their 7th win of the season. And right now, their manager is the manager of the year, Von Nunn. And with that, we're looking to say sayonara. It's Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio. On the Trusting God Radio Network, it's our Friday look back. We've taken a peek at some things. RG3 threw last night. You know, he will not be playing any preseason games, which is only, wow. Doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure that out. We're going to see what the Giants and Jets do over this weekend. We're going to see how the Yankees do this weekend. They haven't been playing well at all. The guys in the National League have been playing some good baseball. American League guys have not been playing that well. We'll keep a tab on how things go to A-Rod. We'll get back to the PGA. We'll be back here tomorrow. Sports in Depth. On Fox Talk Radio, on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. And as you know, let's take a look at the people who make Sports in Depth. And at the top of the list, we start it off, not only African-American matchmaker, our own Darryl Harold Weston Jr., Destino, baby, Lois, Destino, H. Brad Brown, X. He was here earlier. He's back in the studio. Nate B. Berger, baseball. He's on the playoffs team. We got to get him back in the studio. So, the first lady of SIND Sports, Lady A. The Hoopster, Lewis, the Hoopster Hart. He also is on assignment today. Cincinnati Sea Wings was at the Jet camp. He's on the road with the Jets, so we'll get some more of the inside hoops on what's going on with him. And also, our man, the Cisco Kid, because we'll be talking some boxing tomorrow. Probably try to get to that fight down Atlantic City next week. Get him there. You get a live report live from there. But the thing we missed about Cisco is we got him coming. And his man Puncher with that wine. Puncher, don't bring no cheap wine. Remind of that song, Harold and Dog Knight. Jeremiah was a bullfrog. He was a good friend of mine. Never understood a single word he said. But he always brought some mighty fine wine. And with that, gentlemen, we're about ready to slide. Don't move
just
anybody.
Just an update as we're going off the air, Doc, with 12:55 left. It's Detroit 10, Jets 7, 12:55 left in the second quarter of the Jets at Detroit. Second quarter, 11:55 left, Detroit 10, Jets 7. First exhibition game of the year for the New York Jets.
I was reading where the Detroit, one place that Detroit, you know, with the city going bankrupt and everything, that they feel it's an obligation to them as athletes to bring some joy and lift the spirits of the people of Detroit. And the man who lifts our spirits and brings us right on to Sports Net, who coined the phrase, the Sports Net Nation, will now tell you we got to go. Ladies and gentlemen, Rooney, tell the people good night.
Good doctor, the Sports In-Depth Nation's been here. these sports in the panels been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust in God, the radio network. And the store that served the drinks been here. And that's been the Incomparable. Doc Stanley. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, Roy. Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest Adventist sportscast in history on New York City Radio. Sports-wise, one only, Larry Hart has this to say.
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12.
Hey, dearly now, the best.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time
when the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world.
To save a world.
That's destined to
that
die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world.
When I look at the world.
It fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Live for life.
But let's live, everybody.
Live life for the children.
Live.
Let's save all the children.